Well, two young Irish filmmakers, Kim Bartley and Dunico O'Brien, proposed to make a portrait of a new kind of Latin American leader, the then recently elected Hugo Chavez. And in support of, you know, new indigenous filmmaking, which was our role in the Irish Film Board, we gave them a bit of development money and they went down and shot a pilot. And then they came back and we put some production money there, and television stations contributed to the making of an independent documentary. But it wasn't the independent documentary that they thought they were going to make or we thought we were financing, because in front of their eyes, as they were making a cinema verite, fly on the wall documentary, a coup took place. And so they found themselves inside the presidential palace as military officers enter and say, unless you resign, Mr. President, we will bomb this palace in 4 hours' time. So very dramatic events took over, as it were, the movie. But the movie is also about the media. I mean, the title, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, maybe people know it, especially here in the States, but was the great Jill Scott Heron 1974 song of the same title. And it fitted the documentary because of its dual focus on the revolution and the coup to truncate the revolution, and the issue of how it was attacked and undermined by the private media in Venezuela.
What was the effect of the media during the coup on the coup itself?
Well, the media had been implacably hostile, and in a way that's kind of quite, even to denizens of Fox News here in the state, you know, you haven't seen the level of aggressive slander and put down that the private media went for in the first 3 years of Chavez's rule. As the coup happened, they encouraged people onto the streets as part of the plan to overthrow the president. And then when the tide turned, because it was a very short-lived coup, they actually started playing gardening programs and Pretty Women and Pretty Woman, the feature, and as in not reporting the turn of events. So they were very specifically protagonists in the coup. And when in 2007, RCTV, one of those private stations, came up for having its license renewed, the authorities in Venezuela did not renew its license. That was, of course, seized upon by the opposition to show that Chavez was a would-be dictator and this was a suppression of freedom of speech. Although I think one can argue that, you know, if, you know, here in America or in Ireland, where I come from, you know, if a private station had been seditiously supporting the overthrow of the elected government, I don't know that they'd last too long. But RCTV went on transmitting for another 3 years, but didn't get its license renewed for a public broadcaster, though, of course, I mean, they weren't like locked up. They could all transmit on cable, satellite, and the internet. You know, there's an interesting echo of this more recently when just, you know, a month ago, 30 radio stations did not get their license renewed. And the basis for the non-renewal was often quite technical, like they changed ownership without properly informing the authorities, or there had been a change in the nature of the station. So frankly, out of the 300-odd radio stations in Venezuela, 30 lost their licenses because of legal technicalities. But the interesting thing is that those licenses were given to community radio stations. And it's very good to be here in Tampa, in a community radio station, because one of the things that's most interesting that's happening in Venezuela is a kind of grassroots movement, which in terms of the media, I mean, I saw a slogan painted on the wall in Caracas, and I won't try the Spanish, but it translates as neither private nor state, free community media, ANMCLA, which is the community media organization. And I think that that third force creates a space whereby, you know, supportive but critical voices can interact with the extraordinary speed of social change in Venezuela as a revolutionary process occurs. I mean, I visited Avila TV and Katia TV and some of the radio stations, and, you know, young people there are not inhibited to criticize when they think something's going wrong or when there's a possibility of corruption or things are happening badly or wrongly or too fast or too slow. And that is a kind of community voice which goes through to the grassroots. And for those who are concerned about, well, it's a important social change happening in Venezuela, but isn't it too centered on one individual, the charismatic leader? You know, what's happening at grassroots is something, it's less obvious or less dramatic. It's not quite like Chavez coming to New York later this week at the United Nations General Assembly. I mean, he makes an impact. But, you know, the quiet changes going on at grassroots in people's lives, the empowerment and the media component of that is something which I think, I hope, is longer term and more substantial in a way.
So in this country, we hear the negative aspects of that the government of Venezuela is not renewing private radio stations, but you're saying that there is a positive aspect to that as well, that more community groups are having access to the media.
Yeah, and if one is concerned about, you know, diversity and democracy in the media, let's get a sense of proportion. Adding those 30 licenses to the community sector takes the community radio group to about 60 or 65 vis-a-vis another 240 held by private stations. So, you know, we're not talking about the closure of the voices of different sectors of the population. What we're doing is beginning to rebalance it so that there's more voice or more space for different voices.